Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy.
Hello and welcome to The Corridor. I'm Jesse Bell, and today I'm joined by Corridor newsreader Simone Otley. Our first story is from the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC, Christina Laurie, and it covers the Kingston Council's vote to move forward with the next steps in the development of a convention center in the downtown core.
Hello, I'm Christina Laurie, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca. City Council has voted to move forward with next steps to build a new conference center downtown. The city will be providing the land valued at more than $11 million to the project for $1 for the creation of a, quote, vibrant mixed-use development, end quote. The development will be on the tragically hip way across the street from Slush Puppy Place and will include a conference center, hotel, and residential space. The motion included $50,000 for each competitor who submits a proposal.
Once it is built, this is something that's going to serve a community from here on in, and it's going to be in our community for forever. So, and that's why we need to make sure that we get the best possible proposal.
With Tourism Kingston on board to split half the cost, the motion was amended to split that amount evenly between city reserves and municipal accommodation tax revenue, which is normally used to fund tourism-related projects.
If we're able to get six back without having to pay the whole thing, I think that that's excellent. I support this fully. I think it's a really great compromise, and I really appreciate that Tourism Kingston's willing to work with us. I mean, they're always a great partner, but I fully support this.
Most of council was supportive of the motion.
This is, I think, an important time for us to invest in our city, and this is an opportunity that's been coming for a long time. This is kind of like the maturing of our city. We have a beautiful arena. We have it. It's the synergy that we want to continue when the arena was built in our downtown, and it is about a business synergy as well, and it's gonna complement everything that is there. So I would encourage us to we heard tonight to support it. We heard tonight about the positive impact on the economy, and it's a tourism business cycle that we really want. So I really think that this is something to support, and it'll be a great development for us all and for the future. Thank you.
We know that the convention center is greatly needed. That's one check mark. It's producing a number of houses, another check mark. We've heard from a number of our businesses downtown that there is not enough parking. 169 parking spaces will be developed, another check mark. And then obviously a hotel. And in my understanding and in talking to our accommodation partners, another hotel space is desperately needed in the downtown core, so another check mark. So we're hitting four major threshold marks in moving forward with this industry or this development of this kind. So I'm in full favor of this. It's going to create a lot of jobs, right from construction jobs straight through to when the convention center, hotel are up and running. I think this is a good move. This is another step in our downtowns, but specifically our core as a city, growing in the right direction.
While most councillors were in favor of moving forward with the project, some had concerns that this was not the best use of the city's resources.
From what we've seen over the last year since this council started is that we don't have a lot of city-owned land. You know, like in Toronto, they always talk about, okay, we're going to start being a builder of some affordable housing because we have all this extra land. In Kingston, it's really not the case. We do own this parking lot, though, that, you know, is now going to be a convention center. The housing crisis is just getting worse. The affordability crisis is getting worse. And I just think, you know, like it's just getting worse. And as we go forward with this convention center, I think this piece of land is better to hang on to and to think of something that could have some affordable housing units and not a convention center. It's really the only land we have other than, you know, start building on some parking lots like the England parking lot downtown to put some affordable housing on, and I can't support this. Thank you.
I have sort of two objections to this. One is I still have to go back to my constituents tomorrow and say the city is giving $250,000 potentially to a successful development firm that might get an $11 million piece of land. That's a hard thing for me to sell to my my constituents. So I find that a bit problematic here, although I am encouraged the fact that Tourism Kingston did kick in 50%. That's great. The second is just the message that in the midst of a housing crisis and climate crisis, we're building a convention center. It doesn't sit well with me philosophically of the message that we're sending out. I can tell by the conversation around the table how excited everybody is. I realize I'm in the minority here, and I'm fine with that. But just on that, those two philosophical grounds, I'm going to not vote for this. But thank you for the great work staff has done on this report. Thank you.
City Council voted 10-3 in favor of moving forward with the project, with the next step being a request for proposals from all six developers who submitted expressions of interest last year.
Great comments around the table. I appreciate Councillor Tozo's comment. The only thing that I would say is that we can do more than one thing at once. So we can do a convention center, conference center, and a great mixed-use development on this one parcel of city-owned land, and we can also be very aggressive meeting housing targets, affordable housing, supportive housing, absolutely. So appreciate that comment, but to be clear, this is not an either-or. This is a matter of when we have a strategic plan with 115 different initiatives, this is pushing forward one of those, but we're also going to be able to push forward everything else as well. So I think it's a great opportunity. This is a very unique piece of land that has been talked about in this city for a very, very long time. And I am so anxious to see shovels in the ground and to see something built finally next to Slush Puppy Place. I think it would be a great addition to the downtown. So looking forward to seeing what amazing designs and proposals come forward from the proponents later on. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chris. Our first story is from the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for YGK News, Owen Fullerton, and it's about the massive turnout for CDK's new patient registration days. People in Kingston lined up for hours on Monday, February 26th, in hopes of attaining a family doctor. CDK Family Medicine on Sutherland Drive has welcomed four new family doctors and has expanded its network of patients. The clinic asked patients who don't have a family doctor to pre-register ahead of one of their CDK rostering days, initially planning to register prospective patients from 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. on Monday. However, staff stayed well past the 5 p.m. cutoff to register all in line. In response to this massive turnout and the, quote, 5 to 6 hour lines it generated, CDK announced that they would put a hard cap on numbers for their next registration day, which was Wednesday, February 28th. The CDK website stated that, accounting for family members and dependents of each patient who are being rostered, the clinic estimated that 200 to 300 new patients would be accepted. The clinic plans to hold other rostering days throughout the next 4 to 6 months, so those who did not get enrolled last week will have future opportunities to get added to the roster. The clinic hasn't yet stated whether the additional doctors would allow them to once again accept walk-in patients, however. Future rostering dates have yet to be announced, but the sheer demand from the community showcases a shortage of family doctors being felt throughout the province and country. Kingston and the island's MP, Mark Gerritsen, took the opportunity to highlight how federal investment can make adding doctors to communities more frequent, as long as there's cooperation from the Ontario government. Gerritsen noted that the massive turnout for these rostering days underscores the need for accessible healthcare services in the Kingston community. Gerritsen pointed to a $3.1 billion bilateral funding agreement with the provincial government as a promising start, but noted that the onus will be on Doug Ford and the Ontario government to properly allocate those funds. Gerritsen added that, quote, every dollar must be used to help patients across the province as quickly as possible. Thank you to Owen Fullerton from YGK News for that story. We now send it over to Simone Otley with a story from Philip Blanchet, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for the Morrisburg Leader, about the St. Lawrence Parks Commission's plan to celebrate the upcoming solar eclipse.
A solar eclipse that will darken the region on April 8th is becoming an opportunity for area tourists and businesses, including the St. Lawrence Parks Commission. The celestial event, which will not pass through the region again for over 100 years, means that an estimated 8,000 to 10,000 eclipse viewers may visit along the St. Lawrence River. The eclipse misses much of Montreal and avoids Ottawa and Toronto, running along the St. Lawrence River and across Lake Ontario. SLPC properties along the St. Lawrence River fall in the path of totality, including Chrysler's Farm Battlefield Park next to Upper Canada Village near Morrisburg. Jeff Wasick, Director of Historic Sites for the SLPC, explained that the Battlefield Memorial will be open for the day with paid parking. Wasick noted that the paid parking model will both cover the site's operational costs and help manage the number of vehicles looking to access the site. To prepare for the potential number of visitors, the SLPC has acquired 10,000 approved solar viewing glasses for guests. Wasick said that with the number of visitors anticipated, carpooling or using buses to reach the site is encouraged. Wasick noted that other plans may be in the works and that talks with Stormont, Dundas, and Glengarry counties are ongoing. During the February 20th SDG Counties Council meeting, a discussion about the coordination between different provincial and municipal entities took place. Councillor Jason Broad, South Dundas, spoke of the coordination with OPP and the Ministry of Transportation regarding traffic concerns, and that emergency management is looking to ensure that services like land ambulances will have a clear path in the region if needed. SDG County staff recommended at the council meeting that residents of the region should remain home when the eclipse occurred, saying that those in the path of totality will have a good view of it from their own property. The region school boards have already rescheduled a planned PA day to coincide with the April 8th eclipse, to avoid children on buses possibly viewing the eclipse without proper eye protection. The eclipse will enter the partial phase at approximately 2:12 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. This is one of the two times it will be dangerous to look directly at the eclipse with unprotected eyes, as the moon will begin to enter the path of the sun. At 3:24 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, the totality of the eclipse will begin. At this point, protective eyewear can be removed. The totality will last 2 minutes and 7 seconds before entering the declining partial phase. Eyewear must be used again to view the eclipse at this point.
Thank you to Simone and to Philip Blanchet from the Morrisburg Leader for that story. We now move to the local journalism initiative reporter for CJAI Amherst Island, Ted Evans, with a report on Loyalist Township's decision to opt out of Blue Box Collection Services in 2025.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, local journalism initiative reporter and news director at CJAI, Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca. Loyalist Township Council has decided to opt out of providing contracted collection services and depot collection services for Blue Box materials when their current collection contract with Waste Connections expires on July 1st, 2025. This period will last until December 31st, 2025. The province of Ontario is changing its existing waste diversion programs to a producer responsibility model. During the transition period, municipalities have the option to opt in or out of providing recycling services on behalf of Circular Materials Ontario. The company will take over arranging and providing curbside and depot collection services for communities that opt out. In 2026, producers will have full responsibility for the collection, transportation, processing, and sale of recyclable materials throughout Ontario. Loyalist Township has been designated a producer because it supplies paper products to residents. For Amherst Island, the new agreement would need to allow for Circular Materials Ontario's contractor access to the landfill site to permit the hauling of bins, with township staff ensuring that non-eligible source recyclables are not commingled with eligible source recyclables. The township would maintain ownership of the site to continue to provide garbage disposal to residents. Collection service will remain unchanged and uninterrupted for island residents, and landfill staff would have no additional responsibilities for Blue Box recyclables. After the transition, the company may choose to operate a depot at another site or may choose to set up curbside collection on the island. Circular Materials Ontario has indicated that it may consider curbside collection after the transition. According to staff, Circular Materials Ontario has indicated that it may consider curbside collection after the transition. Currently, blue box materials are not collected from public spaces within Loyalist Township. The number of public space receptacles added post-transition will be determined by a density formula in the regulation. According to the report, staff's review of the density formula, along with the township's current population of about 19,000, indicates the township would be eligible for 23 public space receptacles. Senior Technical Advisor Ed Adams explains the history of the province's transition to the new program.
In 2016, the Waste Free Ontario Act, Waste Diversion Transition Act, Resource Recovery and Circular Economy Act, along with the Ontario Regulation 391.21, were adopted, starting the transition to a full producer responsibility system. Municipalities would no longer be responsible for funding recycling services. Of the 376 municipalities in the province, 67 municipalities have transitioned in 2023, 128 will transition 2024, and 181, including Loyalist, will transition in 2025.
Adams lists one of the reasons opting out was a good option for the township.
Under an opting out scenario, we would no longer need to manage the blue box service. However, some municipalities may need to open existing curbside contracts to unbundle blue box service. This isn't an issue for Loyalists, as our contracts are structured to end on July 1st, 2025.
Adams did note some of the cons associated with opting out.
Opting out does give the municipality less control over service delivery details during the transition period, such as co-collection of other materials no longer being options. Scheduling changes may occur, and there'll be less control over routing and different blue box service provider would likely occur. Savings from blue box budgets can be used for other services. We would need to secure an agreement with CMO Blue Box service provider to collect from non-eligible sources should the municipality choose to do so.
While the township ultimately decided to opt out, Adams explains why they might have opted in.
Some of the reasons for opting in would be maintaining consistency over service delivery, such as continued co-collection, scheduled routing of trucks. We would need to ensure that we meet the CMO contract terms and contractor obligations. And municipalities would be responsible for a target of 4% contamination threshold, and need to pay for collection, hauling, and processing of blue box materials from non-eligible sources.
Adams explains some alternative options for depot collections.
The only depot operation in the township is currently at the Amazon landfill site, as there is no curbside collection on the island. The depot collection under an opt-in scenario during the six-month transition period, the municipality will continue to manage the existing island collection depot. Municipality will become a contractor with CMO and continue to receive payments from CMO and continue to be responsible for hauling materials to the designated receiving facility, as well as the cost to rent collection bins. For depots, there is an alternative opt-in scenario where the township could continue to operate the depot during the transition period. However, CMO would be responsible for the hauling and delivery materials.
Circular Materials Ontario is developing a promotion and education campaign to inform the public of changes to the Blue Box program and how it will affect them. For CJAI and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
Thank you to Ted Evans from CJAI-FM Amherst Island for that story. Next up, we have CFWN Coburg's Local Journalism Initiative reporter Jeff Gard with an update about the future of a proposed walk-in clinic in Port Hope.
Port Hope Mayor Olena Hankivsky will bring forward a motion Tuesday night for council to support and endorse the reopening of the Port Hope Walk-In Medical Clinic. The mayor said she and Councillor Les Andrews have been working since the start of the term in the fall of 2022 on bringing back a walk-in clinic for the first time in a number of years at the 99 Toronto Road location. The original goal was to have it open this past November and had some physicians lined up before they hit a snag.
It's like bringing together a number of pieces of a puzzle together. And so we made wonderful progress last year with a number of those pieces. But unfortunately, we had challenges with identifying who would be the leaseholder on the actual physical space. And so that became an obstacle for us late last year. Thankfully, I had some discussions with the county in January, Northumberland County, about whether or not we might engage them to become the leaseholders of the space. It was a very favorable conversation, and it was a conversation that ended with a motion at our last county table where the staff of county was going to move forward on sorting out the details of what that would actually look like.
Mayor Hankivski said she was recently at the Rural Ontario Municipalities Association conference and said a report came out stating how significantly challenged rural communities are when it comes to access to primary care.
There's over 500,000 Ontarians living in rural communities that have no access to primary care, and that 65% of municipalities have no access to a walk-in clinic. And we know that in our county, we're going to lose 10 additional doctors by the end of 2025. So it makes this initiative that much more important. We recognize it is only a Band-Aid solution. We need more systemic changes, but this is an important addition to the health services that will be available to unrostered patients across Northumberland County.
The motion states there are currently 4,000 unrostered patients in Northumberland County. In addition, there are funding partners for the clinic that include the Port Hope and District Healthcare Foundation, the Port Hope Rotary Club, and the Town of Cobourg, as well as the pharmacy at the location at 99 Toronto Road. To start, the clinic would be open Mondays, Wednesdays, Saturdays, and Sundays. Reporting for CFWN, Northumberland 89.7 FM, I'm Jeff Gard.
Thank you to Jeff Gard from CFWN Cobourg for that story. And now we head over to CFRC for the Environment Canada Weather Report. This is Jesse Bell with the Environment Canada Weather Report for the Kingston region. We start with Thursday, March 7th, and we have another beautiful day here in the city of Kingston with a daytime high of 9 degrees Celsius. We are going to see a mix of sun and cloud, but we'll see more sun than cloud into the afternoon. Overnight, we're going to see temperatures drop just a bit below zero, but that's going to spring right back up on Friday, March 8th, another 9 degree daytime high, but it's going to be sunny and bright all day long. Overnight, we're only going to drop down to 2 degrees. The weekend sees a mix of rain and snow, however, starting with Saturday, March 9th, we are going to have a daytime high of 4 degrees, but we are going to see periods of rain throughout the day. Overnight, it drops down to 1 degree, and the rain persists into Sunday, where we're going to see a mix of rain and snow, a daytime high of 3 degrees Celsius, with an overnight low of negative 4. Don't worry, though. That crummy weekend weather will give way to more beautiful, brilliant sunshine starting on Monday, March 11th. We're going to see a slightly cooler daytime high of 6 degrees, but it is going to be sunny and bright, only dropping down to negative 2 overnight. And on Tuesday, March 12th, we're going to get back to that near double-digit weather range with 9 degrees and sunny conditions. This is Jesse Bell wrapping up your Environment Canada Weather Report for the Kingston region and throwing it over to Danielle Draper from CFRC for the Community Concert and Events Calendar.
Have an event you'd like covered on our website and news programming? Contact us via cfrc.ca today. On March 7th, Art Hive will be held at Agnes Etherington Arts Centre from 4 to 6 p.m. Art Hive is a chance for aspiring artists to explore the creative process through experimentation and play. To register for free, visit agnes.queensu.ca. On March 8th, Fresh Food Market Pop-Up, an initiative of Kingston Community Health Centers, will appear at the YMCA from 9:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Fresh Food Market Pop-Up brings affordable produce and chef-created gourmet healthy options to Kingston and surrounding areas every week. Visit freshfoodmkt.ca for more information. Also on March 8th, Queen's A Cappella Association will be hosting their 8th annual a cappella competition at the Isabel Bader Center for the Performing Arts from 7 to 10:30 p.m. If you love Pitch Perfect, this is your chance to see it live. To purchase tickets, which vary in price, visit zeffy.com. On March 8th, in honor of International Women's Day, the Italo-Canadian Club of Kingston will be hosting Empower Market, a networking vendor with local female vendors, live music, food stations, and more. This campaign is meant to empower and celebrate local women in the Kingston community. For more information and to purchase tickets, visit www.icckingston.com. Also on March 9th, head to St. Luke's Anglican Church for an evening of music and dance in support of the United Nations Population Fund and their work with women in Gaza. The event starts at 7 p.m. with doors opening at 6:30. For more information and to purchase tickets for $15, visit eventbrite.ca. On March 10th, renowned comedian, podcast host, actor, and author Bert Kreischer will be performing at the Leon Center at 7 p.m. Tickets vary in price and can be purchased at ticketmaster.ca. Are you a trans, non-binary, genderqueer, genderfluid, or any other non-cisgender person who wants a safer space to swim and to meet other students and wider trans community members? Head over to the Athletic and Recreation Center on February 10th at 10:30 p.m. for a solidarity swim. Swimmers will meet at the Arc Earl Street entrance at 2:20 p.m. This event is free and open to the wider Kingston community. For more information and to register, visit gogalesgo.com. Moving into the concerts for the week, on March 7th, Kingston-based jazz music vocalist Chantel Thompson will be performing a free show from 7 to 9 p.m. at the RCHA Club. Also on March 7th, Blue Martini will be hosting a free open mic night from 8:30 p.m. to 12 a.m. Doors are at 7 and this event is 19+. On March 8th, KPP Concerts and Rankin Productions will present Guy Davis at the Broom Factory from 7 to 10 p.m. Tickets are $35 and can be purchased at ticketscene.ca. Also on the 8th, Maple Blues Award winners and International Blues Challenge semi-finalist Rule and the Big Time will be performing Toronto, Chicago, and Hollywood Blues at the RCHA Club from 8:30 p.m. to 11:30 p.m. Tickets are $20 and can be purchased at the door or by calling 613-384-8168. On March 9th, the Royal Tavern will be hosting a free karaoke night from 9 p.m. to 2 a.m. Also on March 9th, the Tone Cats will be performing a free classic and country rock show at the Toucan from 10:30 p.m. to 4 a.m. On March 10th, head to the Broom Factory to see BRKN Love and Royal Tusk perform with the Honest Heart Collective from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. This event is all ages. To purchase tickets for $25, visit broomfactory.ca. Also on March 10th, Cherish the Ladies, an Irish music band, will be performing from 2:30 p.m. to 5:30 p.m. at the Grand Theatre. Tickets are $40 and up and can be purchased at kingstongrand.ca. And lastly, on March 10th, head to Musiki Cafe to see Anthea Fever perform from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. Admission is pay what you can at the door. This has been Danielle with your events and concerts calendar for March 4th to 10th. Wishing you all a great week.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and New Leaf Link. Don't forget to visit CFRC.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter at CFRC. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for tuning into The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. We'll see you next time.
Did you know that New Leaf Link offers day programming for adults with developmental disabilities? We serve families in Kingston and South Frontenac. Our program focuses on arts, healthy living, and community connections, including summer camp. New Leaf Link's caring staff and talented instructors provide a place for everyone to learn together and build friendships. If you or someone you know would like to join our program, please visit newleaflink.ca for more details. Together, we can grow, connect, and belong. Your true friend loves
you just as you are. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.